You are listening to the Keith Craft Podcast. Get ready to think better and be encouraged through weekly episodes created with you in mind. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Hey, this is Josh Craft, and before we jump into today's podcast, I want to let you know about a special offer that my dad has going for this month, December 2022. He is the number one think coach in the whole world. At least I call him that. And what is a think coach? You see, everything that we have in life is a result of our thinking. What he teaches is that how you think plus your attitude plus your actions will always equal what you have in life. Your thinking plus your being plus your doing equals what you have. So if you can learn to think better about anything in your life can get better in that area. He's coached thousands of people over the last 30 years, from Fortune 1000 executives to pro athletes to entrepreneurs to CEOs to employees, whoever you are. I think you can benefit from think coaching. And right now, his online mastermind is going to provide more value than ever because we're offering 60% off only for the month of December 2022 using the code ONLINE2022 on his website. The link will be in the show notes, but you can go to keithcraft.org to check out this offer and the many other things that he has available. Now enjoy the podcast.
It's great to have my friend Erwin McManus with me today and, of course, Josh. And great to have you, Josh.
I'm glad to be here.
Yeah,
you look so excited to be here.
He does. He really.
I don't know if I can handle all that uncontained enthusiasm.
Yeah, sitting here with two titans.
Oh, yeah.
Of leadership.
Right. Well, we wanted to invite you.
I'm glad
we've
to be
a few
here.
Things we'd like to talk about.
Oh, perfect.
This is an intervention. Actually.
Good. I get to hear it in person, and so does everyone else.
That's what it is. Erwin, you and I have. Or let me say. My perspective. I've had the privilege to become your friend. And
we've been friends, you can say that.
Yes, we've been friends. We've been friends now for a week. And, no, but for real, you are a great thought leader. And I'm in that space as well. And yet our past and our experiences are much different. But I just wanted to ask you some questions as it relates to being a thought leader. You know, that there's a lot of people who are so focused on what they do. And I've always said that when you're paid for how you think rather than what you do, you'll always be paid more. How important is it for somebody to think, to think different? Maybe that's a weird question to ask, but how important is it for somebody to think different beyond whatever their natural default is? Because I think we all have natural defaults. I think our natural defaults are personality. I think our natural defaults are our ethnicity. I think our natural defaults are our nationality. I mean, I could just list thing after thing, the way we were raised. So we've all got natural defaults, and I think in the beginning, middle, and end, the limitations that we really have are really in our default category. And if I don't ever think differently, then I'm just going to default to whatever that normal is.
Well, I almost feel like there's a tension here where we have, interesting thing in culture where an endless number of 20 and 30 year olds are life coaches when they haven't actually lived life yet.
Interesting.
And I cannot tell you how many people I've seen even come out of our community at Mosaic who figure out, oh, there's an entire economy in this.
Yeah.
And so they're business coaches without ever having a successful business. Mm. They're marriage coaches without having successful marriages. They're life coaches without having successful lives. And so I think that there has to be the right integration of thinking differently, but also allowing that thinking to be measured in the reality of living.
Yeah.
And so there's a sense where when I was in my 20s, maybe I had a massive ideology. I had all these ideologies about life and and philosophy and everything else. And then I had to hit real life. And at the end of it, I came out with some ideas.
Yeah.
You know? And I think the highest level of thinking, it can be proved in on the grassroots of real life.
Mm.
You know, and so you're a thought leader, but not because you're just a thinker, but because you're an actor. Because you act out on your thoughts,
yeah.
And you've been able to filter out which ideas you had were beautiful but impractical.
Yeah.
Which ones were entertaining and amusing, but not life-giving and life-changing.
Yeah.
And so I think a huge part of being a thought leader is about learning how to filter through ideas and idealism and to the practicality of what actually brings change in real life.
Ooh, very good.
And I think that's like we've talked a lot about, and I think in my own experience, I'll just speak for the young people that think that they know everything, right? I remember when I first came on staff and really started to work with you in a professional environment versus just being your son. There's so much stuff that I was like, I thought I was like this answer man, right? That somehow I was going to help you, right? And so we got into this conversation, I think, for us a few years ago about the difference between theory and transformation. And theory's fine, like Pastor Irwin's saying, the ideology and all that, but before you preach it, right? That's what you've said. Before you like teach it, you actually have to allow the theory to transform you, right? Yeah. Like that triad that you.
Yeah. Well, again, I think there's the ideal and there's the reality, I think, for everybody. And I think that sometimes people shy away from the ideal for themselves, but they hold other people to the standard of the ideal that they have. And then there's this reality of what it is, whether it's the reality of your marriage, the reality of where you are in your journey, the reality of where you are financially, whatever it is, there's a reality and then there's an ideal. And unfortunately, somewhere between our reality and our ideal, our expectations are set. Mm-hmm. And those expectations, like people say, where do your expectations come from? It comes from, here's reality, here's ideal. And somewhere in that space comes my expectations. And unfortunately, for a lot of people, they're unrealistic expectations. And those unrealistic expectations become unmet expectations. Because the only way that they are able to process the ideal that they believe, here's how marriage is supposed to be, here's how a church is supposed to be, here's how my boss is supposed to be, here's how my spouse is supposed to be, here's how my children are supposed to be, and they measure everything against the ideal of what they think, then again, they set those expectations by default, mm-hmm. and then begin to project that on other people, and so they're alive. Here's the reality of what their life is, and nobody's meeting their expectations. And they don't realize those unmet expectations are really a result of being unrealistic based on your ideal, which is supposed to be focused on you being the ideal first. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where all thought, to me, that's where all thought needs to begin. All thought needs to begin with yourself. In other words, I've got to be, I'm not a thought leader if I can't think right myself. I'm not a thought leader if I can't think different beyond my normal myself. I mean, what's your thoughts about that? Like,
it's like the idea of a person who's very, very physically unhealthy. It's like, that's kind of what you're saying. Someone who's very, very physically unhealthy going, I know all the, like you use the word ideology. I know the ideology behind being healthy, but there's a whole lot between this, all this information and actually developing into the life coach or whatever, right?
Yeah, it's another thing. When I was much younger, I realized that you didn't actually have to have an expertise to come across like an expert.
Mm. Mm.
And so one of the things I tried to do in my life is to try to make sure I wouldn't teach things that I had not lived.
Mm.
And to hold myself to that measure. And I've been married almost 40 years, but I've never written a book on marriage. You know, my son's 31, my daughter's 27, but I've never written a book on parenting. And those are things people have always asked us to write about.
Right.
But I didn't want to write about those things before I can look back and say, okay, I did this well. Or also, I here's where I didn't do it well.
Yeah.
And here's what I've learned from that process along the way. But let's flip that back the other way, because I just want to begin by saying that one of the dangers in our culture is that so many people are, quote, identifying themselves as thought leaders, as life coaches, and as business coaches that actually don't have the gravitas of experience behind that. Mm. But on the flip side, how important it is to make thinking a high priority.
Mm.
And it's, I mean, I don't know who all of our audience is,
yeah.
But one of the challenges I find in Christianity and in the church is that we've actually lowered our level of thinking to this belief system that all I need to know is the Bible.
Mm.
And when people say that, they don't even mean that. All I need to know is the part of the Bible that my particular group adheres to. And, you know, and so if you whittle it down to, you know, Jesus, right? And you know, I'm a follower of Jesus. I love Jesus with every fiber of my being, and all my life is indebted to him. But I think it's a real problem, you know, that old adage where, you know, you're in church and they ask you, what has four legs is for, climbs trees and hunts for nuts, and everybody yells out, Jesus. Because in the church, there's only one answer, is Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, how do you fix your marriage? Jesus. How do I get a promotion? Jesus. And what that's done is that we thought that was being spiritual, but it actually has made superficial our thinking.
Mm.
So we're not allowed to ask meaningful questions about how do I become a better leader.
Well, that's the default, right? I mean, yeah. in that one space, in the church world space, the default is, it's all about Jesus. And I've always tried to say to people, it's not all about Jesus. It's actually all about you and you discovering who Jesus is, you know, but anyway.
Yeah, 37 years of marriage didn't work because I always just told my wife, Jesus, baby.
You know, it's all about Jesus. Yeah.
Sometimes it was about taking out the garbage.
Yeah.
and a lot of it was about Kim.
Yeah.
Making my life about Kim and loving her and paying attention to who she is as a person, what her needs are, and becoming an expert in this one human being.
Yeah.
Wow.
And understanding who she is and what she needs from me. And I feel like what's happened in the church oftentimes is we keep preaching the same beliefs and we don't understand why we're getting the same low results.
Ooh.
And I think one of the things that you're really trying to do is you're trying to bring thinking back into the center of our faith.
Yeah.
And one of the things that drives me about, like, some of the big conferences, and I won't say which ones, but some, let's say, like, leadership summits that are out there and that are Christian, but they also bring in, like, see people from the business community. Mm-hmm. Is a lot of times they bring in the business leaders to talk about leadership and then the pastors to inspire. I remember I was invited to ones multiple times, and I would always tell them, I said, why is it that you only ask us when we're pastors to inspire rather than to give insight?
Ooh.
And I said, it's because you actually don't believe in spiritual leadership, that people who are leading in the space of the church are actually better leaders than people leading at IBM.
Ooh.
And I said, the reality is that all leadership is spiritual. And what's, to me, so ironic is that the business world is trying to figure out how to lead more like pastors. And then the church is being convinced to lead more like businessmen.
Yeah.
And the reality is that if you really understand the scriptures and you look at the deep thinking in the scriptures, you will become a really thoughtful person. You'll become a better leader, a better husband, a better father, a better human being.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how do you feel like that you develop that skill? It's less about just normally being a thinker, like a natural state of like, oh, I just think. It's more about developing a skill and doing the hard work of kind of this deep practice, focused, intentional thing, right?
That's actually good insight.
I'm learning that.
Years ago when I was in Korea, this businessman gave me two categories. Because they would ask me to come and do some work there. And And I asked him, I said, why, you know, would you put all the effort in flying me from Los Angeles to Seoul? And he said, because most leaders are content containers, and then a few leaders are content creators.
Ooh.
Mm. He said, you're a content creator. But what I thought was interesting is he wasn't diminishing the content container. He was saying, I am a content container. And he had a huge container.
Yeah.
And so he goes, so like his self-investment is he would find content creators and bring them in so that he could process all that information. I realized what an incredible level of humility to not care where the great idea comes from.
Yeah.
Ooh.
To not care where you're getting the material from which you become more effective and more successful. So I think some of it is that I feel like I'm also a content container. I'm always learning from other people. I learn from you. I learn from every experience. I learn from every moment in life. And so I would say I'm a content container, but I'm also a content creator. And I think it's a smaller percentage of people that actually can process divergent pieces of information and coalesce them in a new way where something truly original emerges.
Mm.
I think a lot of creativity is taking material that is already out there, but seeing formation of integrations that no one had ever seen before, and all of a sudden you're creating something new out of them. So you're taking something from botany, and you're taking something from anthropology, and taking something from the scriptures. And I think in Unstoppable Force, I talk about the Baka people.
Yeah.
And like, you know how I found out about the Baka people? It's because 30 years ago, I order 40 periodicals a week. I go through 40 magazines every week. And aside from the books I would read. And so I would just ransack all those from the most liberal to the most conservative, the reader to, you know, whatever, the Time magazine back then. And, you know, whatever else was in there. And I would process all these. And I saw this advertisement for Exxon. And the Exxon advertisement, they told this little tiny piece about the Baka people. But you see, for me, it's like, I'm intrigued by everything. So I write that down. I start researching the Baka people. I find out this tribe in the Amazon has a PhD level knowledge of botany by the time they're 9 or 10 years old. Wow. Because they live in the most dangerous ecosystem in the world. And the question I was trying to answer, because my wife asked me this, is, do you think humans can learn anything? And I told her, I said, anything we need for survival. And so here you're dealing with questions of discipleship. How do you disciple people? How do you help people grow in their spiritual maturity? And I'm going, wait a minute, the Baka people can have a PhD level knowledge of botany by the age of 9. So it means that our capacity is far greater than we can imagine. We just don't need it for survival.
Mm.
And so what happens is the more comfortable you are, the more safe you are, the more secure you are in your faith, and the less danger, the less unpredictability, the less uncertainty it is, the slower you'll grow.
Wow.
And so a lot of leadership is trying to create a safe space for people and create a high learning system, and they're mutually exclusive.
Ooh.
Which, like, you're so, like, the goal is so often is to find what's easy or do exactly what you're discussing, and that's like, let's get out of danger. Like,
well, we need someone to navigate us out of it. That's the default. That is the default.
So, like, is there a way that you feel like to, you know, intentionally cultivate your ability as a creator? Like, how do you... And maybe some of it is natural, just in terms of leaning into your natural strengths. But how can you develop awareness around being able to connect these disparate ideas and what's out there? Because I've heard you do a talk before where you went from, in one talk, you were talking about astronomy and planets, and then we got into biology of like fish, and it was like how all these things connected, and it was so for me to watch that. I'm like. You know, shoot, that's crazy. I don't know anything about any of that stuff, but is there a way that you feel like someone can start to really cultivate and build that?
Well, I think part of it is nurturing your curiosity.
Mm.
You know, I think one of my favorite talks ever done is on black holes. And,
that's the one. That's the one I'm talking about. That's the one I heard you give. I'm like, he's talking about black holes, and then we end up talking about how things are on the earth and how all these crazy things connect. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I think I'm just curious about everything, right? And I look for meaning. I believe everything has meaning.
Yeah, I love that.
And so once you believe that the entire universe is created with intention, then you just start paying attention to the intention, and you grow and you learn. And so I think some of it is just to remain always in a posture of learning.
Yeah.
You know, to position yourself where every day you're learning something new and to try new things. You know, so I'm always trying to learn new things right now. I'm I'm trying to be a chef, you know, and so I'm working on so many different aspects of learning how to chef, and I watch shows about chefing and I read about chefing, and you know, I'm paying attention to all these geniuses. We live in a time where you can be mentored by anyone you want, and they're not allowed to say no because you can just pay for the subscription.
or YouTube or Google it.
Well, it's masterclass, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Well, I've heard you talk that way about like Spanish before.
Yeah.
Like how you just intentionally went, I'm just going to do whole messages in Spanish.
Yeah, so I download all these Spanish television shows from Spain, and by the way, there's one, Casa de Papel, I think it's called Money Heist in English, and so I keep in Spanish, and I listen to it in Spanish, and I have subcatches in Spanish, and I teach myself Spanish, and then I pull some things down in Portuguese, or pull them down, and because I was like, I have the whole world accessible to me, and I can keep learning different parts of different languages, and so some of it is, you just have to learn till you die.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And one of the things about languages is that when you learn another language, your brain opens up in a whole new space. Like in the scriptures, when it says in the beginning was the word, but in Spanish it says, en el principio estaba el verbo. And so in Spanish it says, in the beginning was the verb.
Wow.
I mean, think about the nuanced difference between what you get in English, the beginning was the word, to the beginning was the verb. And that's why I think a lot of American Christians are about belief. And Latin America is about action, because Jesus is the verb. He's always action, not just the word of a statement. And when I look at Genesis, every time God declares, there's an action.
Yeah.
See, so the little nuanced difference.
And all this insight comes from your pursuit of being curious about learning Spanish.
There's truth,
right?
Waiting to drop on you.
That's amazing.
Like rain, if you hold out your little cup.
And you just ask questions and
well, you know,
curious.
The thing that I've asked for years, it doesn't matter what platform I'm on, is who taught you to think like you think? Where did you learn to think like you think? First of all, that question, people don't question themselves about that. Mm-hmm. Like, why do I think about black people the way I think about black people? Mm-hmm. Why do I think about white people the way I think about white people? Why do I think about whatever it is?
Money, you know, or your marriage, yeah, or kids.
Who taught you to think like you think? So get real with that, first of all. The second thing is, do you like the way they thought? No, the people that you've now identified that helped you think like you think. Do you like the way that they thought?
Like if you had a dysfunctional parent, and they taught you how to think about
what was that
relationships.
Like?
I didn't.
What was that like? Thank you for bringing that up, son. That is really helpful.
We all are at varying levels of dysfunction.
Yes,
no, but I'm just
do.
Saying, like, some people, though, they process their marriage through the filter of the unsuccessful marriage of their parents.
Yeah.
And they think, oh, my dad did this, but their dad was not a great dad.
Yeah.
You know, right?
So again, just.
That's what you're
kinda,
saying.
Yeah,
you're
just,
a great dad,
yeah.
By the way.
Thank
you're
you.
A wonderful
you, son.
Husband
thank
and father.
You. Thank
and,
you. Thank you for believing
Papa
that.
Papa to the You're, children.
It's probably some delusion there.
It's not delusion.
I thank you for giving meaning to meaning.
Yes.
Okay. So again, where did you learn to think like you think? And then once you've identified that, do you like the way that they thought? And then I think the other thing is to own the way that you think. Mm-hmm. I don't think people own the way they think.
Yeah.
And therefore, that's what blocks them from thinking better. Mm-hmm. I just want to get your thoughts on that, because we all pre-think. And we don't realize that we're pre-thinkers. Mm-hmm. And it's like my pre-thinking about whatever it is not only shapes what I'm involved with, whether it's marriage, any relationship, money, doesn't matter what it is. The way that I pre-think shapes that and either unleashes creativity to take whatever the thought is to another level, or just to get me stuck. Like, I think a lot of people are stuck because they don't realize that they're pre-thinkers, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
And just what's your thoughts about that? I mean,
well, there's three questions.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought a lot about why I think the way I think. And or who actually like shaped me that way. And I'd say probably the most significant person was my grandfather.
Mm.
And I lived in El Salvador until, I don't know how old I was, 3, 4, 5 years old. But somewhere between the day I was born And the day I came to the States, he taught me how to play chess. Mm. So I was probably no younger than three, but no older than five when I learned how to play chess.
Wow.
And he's a very ruthless, competitive man. So he never let me have a move. And I'd move four, five, six times, and he'd checkmate me, and I would cry because I was five.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd say, Papi, you let me have a move, and he would say, when you earn a move, you can have it. And so he taught me a worldview that my choices have consequences.
Very good.
And if I learn how to think better, I get more space.
Mm.
And that if I wanted to take more ground, I couldn't ask for it because it wouldn't be given to me. I had to learn how to outthink my opponent.
Okay, so stop right there for a minute. I just want everybody to really get that. If I learn to think better, I get more space. In other words, if I can think better, it increases my capacity. I don't have capacity, even though everybody has capacity, mm-hmm. I don't have capacity first. I have an ability to think that can create capacity.
Yeah, and because he was so competitive, he would make me drop my king whenever I lost, or he would knock my king down. So there was a physical, tangible reality that my choices had a negative outcome or a positive outcome.
Very good.
And so that, and he taught me other things that before I was 5 years old that were set in space. And he lived 1 month short of 100 years old.
Wow.
And I remember he told me, one of the last things he ever said to me was, because I still remember I still remember my earliest memory of you and as a little boy. And I said, what's that? And he goes, I knew you were different when your brother asked you a question. My brother was 2 years older than me. And you gave him an answer. And your brother said, well, that's a stupid answer. He said, you looked at him and said, you know, when you ask a stupid question, all you can get is a stupid answer. And my grandfather said, somehow I knew that you thought differently.
Yeah.
And I think that what I was taught so early was, never assume that the starting point is where things begin. Look behind the starting point, see what's informing that, and that's where the wisdom is.
Mm.
So many silly things.
Can you explain that? Because that's like really profound.
Well, that's like,
look beyond the starting point. Like, what is that?
It's the pre-think, that's so, right? I mean, yeah, that's like, what it is.
Yeah, and what are the assumptions people
like
bring into
this moment?
Like,
what caused the starting point? What's
behind it? Because it's what Jesus did. He never answered the questions being asked. He answered the motive that was informing the question.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. And some of the silliness, like I would stand against the wall, my grandfather would say, don't ever lean against the wall, stand up straight. Because when you lean against the wall, people will see you as weak. And
wow.
And I thought to myself, wow, I didn't know people would be thinking. Like, so what he was teaching me is everything I did was communicating something about who I was.
Wow.
And creating a perception of who I am to other people. He brought out this map before I came to the United States. He said, when you get to the United States, remember, I'm not even five yet. He's showing a map how the Asians migrated across the Bering Strait, came through North America into Central and South America. And he explained to me that Christopher Columbus and these Europeans came across, and they said they thought they were in India. And so they named the people of this continent Indians. He goes, so when you go to the United States, they're going to call you an Indian. But never let yourself be defined by another man's mistake.
Wow.
It's very powerful.
Yeah, and so he was already teaching me, people are going to try to define you. You have to decide who you are. You define yourself, you're defined by others. And so when I came to the States, I already had that inside of my thinking.
Ooh, very good.
And then by the time I was 9 years old, this friend of mine, in fact, I remember this Jewish kid who lived right behind us, he snuck over all this, what do you call it, the stuff that's illegal, contraband. He read all this contraband.
Like drugs? Like what?
No, you know, other kids were looking at pornography.
Yeah.
He brought over all this science fiction.
And that was contraband.
Contraband. So I'm 9 years old. And he brings Robert Heinlein and Andre Norton, Isaac Asimov, and Ray Bradbury. And he goes, I got these books. And we would fight, me and my brother and this kid, we would just rotate reading. And so I'm reading these physicists who are imagining other dimensions and other worlds and extra, terrestrial experiences and multidimensional realities. And, I'm looking at string theory and complexity theory at the age of 9. And I'm devouring these books, not realizing they're shaping my view of reality.
Mm.
And the first time I ever encountered anything about Jesus was in one of those books. It was a tale of this astronaut who went from planet to planet. He lands on this planet. This crowd's going crazy. Something's happening. He's working his way through this crowd on this planet he's never been to. And he gets to the center of the town. He realizes they're crucifying Jesus. And then he gets in his ship and he travels to the next planet. It's the crowd is going crazy. He realizes he's in the same scenario and they're crucifying Jesus, but he's there just a little bit earlier. And now he's traveling from planet to planet, trying to get to a planet before Jesus is crucified so he can meet him before he dies. And I'm reading the science fiction story and I don't even know anything about God.
In no context.
I have no context, but I'm going, there's this person, Jesus, who has died for the sins of every species on every planet that exists in the universe. And I'm like, I already have goosebumps.
And that's where it started for you, though. That's where thinking about species on planets
and all this stuff.
That's amazing.
No. So then I become a Christian, and people go, no, you're not allowed to use your imagination. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but it's already run away.
It's too late.
I feel like people just have to become childlike again.
Yeah.
Okay, not childish,
childlike. So let's stop right there for a second, because I just want to end with this. You just said, I think the answer is one of the things. How just two ways people can think better. So you just said be more childlike. I mean, that's
more curious.
More curious. Yeah. So in other words, be curious. Can you explain that a little bit? What it means to be curious?
Like, I feel like at some point for all of us, questions become bad. Like, you shouldn't ask that question, or you don't need to know that information. Or, you know, it's like I think of even with in our family, or like when I got, well, when I got married, like, Courtney asked so many questions about everything. It's like begins to bother you, the amount of questions that are being asked. Like, I don't want to answer any questions right now.
You ask a lot of questions.
I do ask a lot of questions. So I'm reaping where I have sown. But also, I think
people ask a lot.
Probably
of
at some point in a maturity process, like you were saying about, you lose your imagination. Like, don't, you're being too far out there right now. Like, just ground yourself in reality.
Because if you want to add a second one to being curious or childlike, I'd say is you have to care deeply about something. Because if you don't care deeply about a problem, you won't be motivated to solve it no matter what.
Mm.
And when you care deeply about something, you'll become creative enough to solve that problem. And for me, in the context of Mosaic, our church in Hollywood, I wasn't trying to be the most creative church in the world or the most innovative church in the world or anything. I was trying to reach people I loved in LA, in Hollywood, that would not be reached through a traditional format of our expression of faith.
Ooh.
And I feel like a lot of times the reason we're not at our most creative is because we don't care deeply about something.
Ooh.
You have to, I think love is the greatest motivator for creativity and for a higher level of thinking. I think empathy is the highest level of thinking.
Ooh.
And people are trying, I've been doing a lot of, I've studied genius for a long, long time. And sociopathic behavior. So I don't know.
Both ends of the spectrum.
And the spectrum. And I've come to the conclusion over 60 years that empathy is the highest form of genius.
Mm.
And when a person reaches a level of empathy where they truly understand and connect to the emotional content in another human being, they almost become unexplainable on a human level. And I feel like if you want to talk about thought leading, solving problems is somewhere in the middle between connecting to humanity's deepest needs.
Beautiful. So after my heart attack, I came back to the church.
Yes, sir.
And what was the number one thing after my heart attack that I said to the church?
Just, you want to be a leader with empathy. That you feel like your journey right now where God has you is really to not take the bull by the horns, right? Not just, we're going to take the mountain, but to really have empathy and
I said, you
see
know what,
people
my,
where they're
my
at,
number
you know?
One takeaway from my heart attack, because I should have died, was I want to be more empathetic. I want to be a more empathetic leader.
That's awesome. I love that.
I love that you said that, because it is the cry of my heart now. I know that's a God thing in me. I know that's God working in me to be a better leader, to be truly a thought leader. How can you be a thought leader if you're not thoughtful?
Yeah.
You know? And so anyway, thanks for...
It's like a whole nother...
That's a whole nother deal.
That's right a whole there. Nother deal but for I, a whole nother day.
I just appreciate your heart, Erwin. Thank you. Thank you for being a thought leader that's yes. impacted.
Thanks for letting me ask you so many questions all the time.
Oh, it's yeah, but I love that. So let's just end with you saying one more time, you said about empathy, you feel like it's the highest, what did you say? Empathy.
It's the highest form of thinking. Highest form of genius. Genius. Is empathy.
Yeah. Son, I have a chance.
We all do. If we can become empathetic.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate
Thanks
you.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Keith Kraft Podcast. For more information on personal coaching, masterminds, and other leadership resources, go to keithkraft.org. You can also stay connected by following @KeithKraft on all social platforms.